Welcome to the Startup Showcase. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. We've got a pretty good show, I think, ahead of us today. I say pretty good show, like I'm not even sure about it. We've got two things I'm excited about. The Startup Showcase portion, which is going to be on the back half of the show, per the usual, is Quantum RE. And I actually am really excited. You know, sometimes I let the companies just sort of pitch, and I don't do any recon on it because I don't want to know what it's about because I want to have like a natural read on it. This one, I couldn't help it. Mostly because I couldn't figure out what the company was by the name, so I went and looked at it, Quantum RE. I think all of you listening are going to get a kick out of this, so I'm going to go ahead and tell you to gear up and get ready to call in if you want to ask questions. The number for this is 312-981-7200. Here's the idea, I won't spook the whole thing, but just want to get you excited. You can actually take cash for equity in your home without debt. I'll leave it at that. I should have given this to David Hochberg. I feel like he would have blown his mind on this one. And then what else we're going to do today on the show is talk to our good friend, writer John McDermott, and catch up a little bit on, I think, a pretty ridiculous topic. I would love to also know what you guys think about it. You can tweet at me, at Catoon, or at McDermott on this conversation, or call in, of course. I'll say it again, 312-981-7200. Call us up. What do you think about Twitter and other social media mediums fact-checking you? How far does it go? What does it mean? I think you're going to be surprised in my take on this. I'm going to ask our friend Sam in the booth here real quick. Sambo, do you know what I'm talking about?
Fact-checking, I love to hear it. I don't know what you're talking about, but explain to me.
Enlighten me. Are you serious? You don't know what this is? Like, you don't know what I'm talking about?
I'm dealing with a bunch of side stuff on the other side, so I haven't been really up the news. I know the SpaceX launches today, so I'm looking forward to that.
The side stuff that's on the side as opposed to what at the top?
Yeah. Okay, you know, so, I'm a side guy.
So Trumpty Dumpty got mad at Twitter because Twitter put a fact check piece on him, on his tweets. It basically said, like, you have to, you know, click on these things to verify whether what he's saying is true. And not even getting into the Trump thing, like, I do care a lot about that, but I'm going to spare myself the frustration. He essentially pushed back on Twitter or on Twitter's move there and essentially signed a bill that would say all of these social media organizations were going to have to rein it in and have actual, not censorship, and there's a big difference which we'll get into, but fact-checking. You can't spread news that is knowingly not accurate. And that whole thing sort of changes the way that we look at social media and who can be, quote-unquote, a reporter. And the impact is insanely complex, but also insanely impactful on the world. And so basically what happens here is, and I don't think it might apply to you because you are in media, Sam, but to the regular Joe and Jane, I'm not sure yet how it will apply. But essentially, you will go out there and say something impactful about, your breaking news. So let's say there's a bunch of people who are protesting and you want to break news. If you were to just outright lie, they could take down your tweet or take down your post.
So does it just take it down, or would it say liar or something? Like, how would they prove it's lying? It just takes it down, or?
Yeah, so that's, well, we'll get into that. But there's a hope. So, like, essentially what you're saying has to be provable. So, like, absolutely. If you were to, like, just push out, like, something completely asinine that's going on, they would be able to tell that, like, what you're sharing is not accurate at all and potentially harmful to the people who are reading this tweet. And so they would mark it, at minimum, they'd mark it as, like, not factually, you know, provable or confirmed. At maximum, they might pull it down altogether.
Well, I'm sorry, right? I got 10 fingers.
Well, maybe you don't have 10 fingers.
I don't. I got 8 fingers and 2 thumbs. See, would you fact check that?
And with that, we're going to take a break. I'm just kidding. That's a great. No, okay, so we're going to get into this. We will take a quick break here, pay some bills, and then come back with John McDermott. And we're working on a piece together on this exact topic. So I'm excited to dig into it. Like I said, it's a complicated piece to unravel. So feel free to call in 312-981-7200 or tweet away at Catoon. We'll be back right after this. We are on the show with my good friend, John McDermott. John, are you using a MyPillow?
No, I am now using a MyPillow. I can't say I'm a loyal customer at this moment.
You need to.
But after that live read, I mean, sold.
I feel like you should. I actually was going to give them a whirl because I was doing Tempur-Pedic, and I got like a Tempur-Pedic mattress, and I don't know, it's not working so good. And then I tried what's the one that's super cool and hot in the tech sector, just went public.
Oh my God! There are so many different mattress startups. I mean, who can even keep track?
It's but the Casper was Casper, a hot one. That's what it was. I did Casper. I was underwhelmed with that one, so I'm going to go ahead and say that MyPillow is probably better than Casper because Casper gave me a big time neck ache. But that's just me. I'm crazy like that.
Akita. One of my friends has a Akita mattress, and it's legitimately the comfiest thing I've ever placed my body on. It's amazing.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'll keep that in mind. Well, thank you for that. That's why we had you call in, so now we're just going to hang up on you because now we just want
exactly.
to I called
been mattress talk.
This is great, dude. Hey, we're having pillow talk. Our relationship just moved up like seven notches.
Of all the things to discuss in the world.
On radio. Legit pillow talk. Okay, so I actually had you call in because we have been talking offline about this whole call it fake news, call it fact-checking, whatever. And obviously, I think you have a very unique insight into this, not just because of, you know, you being a social media darling, but also because you write news, you do stories, and it matters a great deal that when you write stories that there's fact-checking done on the editorial side. And I think we've both kind of come to this point with not just social media, but just media in general, people who decide to just become news people, or so they think they are news people by saying things on Twitter. Why don't we go and unpack this a little bit? What are you seeing? What are you feeling? Where are you at on this whole fact-checking on social?
So just for context for the listeners, this was all kicked off when Twitter decided to add some caveats to the bottom of a couple of Trump tweets about, I think they were about election fraud specifically.
Yeah, and I shared that on the front end of the show. I gave kind of the general background. Mm-hmm. But you can feel free to dig into like what this actually means.
Okay, but this has been a controversy that has existed literally for years. When I was working as a staff writer at Digiday 6 years ago, I was writing about this very topic. It has only kind of become mainstream national news lately because of Trump, because of how polarizing he is, and just because of how he dominates the news cycle. But for years, we have let these social media properties have it both ways, which is that they market themselves as news services, and they get a lot of their engagement from users by serving up news content, but they're never held accountable in the way that a news service is. Yep. And I personally have a problem with that. So it puts me in a weird position where, I'm kind of, it spans the political divide and kind of lumps people in together with people who make for strange bedfellows politically. But I actually welcome what Twitter is doing in terms of fact checking, provided that they operate transparently. And that is an enormous caveat and something they've not been willing to do.
Yes. And on this topic, I think, you know, we've talked about this, that I really have a problem with the fact that I think consumers don't view social media with the enormous impact and significance that it actually holds. I feel like it's sort of like, it's Facebook, like it's a joke. And it's like, it's not. They're like,
no,
you know, what we talked about before about this is like Facebook and Twitter. In the early stages, when I was just using it to basically stalk classmates at college, mm-hmm. and to like scroll jokes and memes and take pictures of myself eating silly food, I don't care whether that's true or not, or whether you lied about who made the food. Like that's inconsequential. The minute you become a self-proclaimed source of news, when you have a news icon or button on your app, or you are trending and you're trending breaking news, and that's part like a major part of your app, you now are different. You're not just a joke store at that point.
Yeah.
And then the part that I think the consumers, and I, this is the part that blows me away, why people are not more like just flabbergasted or blown up over this is beyond me, because these people, the social media people who run these companies, literally knowingly are making a fortune feeding you ads, by keeping your eyes glued to their app, by feeding garbage news one direction or the other, and having you stick in content and joust back and forth with your idiot neighbor. That is like, that's mm-hmm. their, that's part of their business model.
Totally. And you bring up a good point. Yeah. And you bring up a good point. It's not like they stumbled into this. They made a conscious decision, a conscious business decision to get into the news business, which is fine. I mean, that's fine. But if you are going to do that, you need to be transparent. You need to be held accountable about the editorial decisions that you make. So now people are all up in arms because they're fact-checking tweets. Like one of the Winklevoss twins, you know, was tweeting about this. Some of the most idiotic tweets. Yeah. Some of the most idiotic public statements I've seen in quite some time, which is saying a lot. But he was saying just like, how dare they conduct some type of editorial oversight? What I have been arguing is that these companies have always been making editorial decisions. Twitter always makes, has been doing it for years. Who they decide to verify, that's an editorial decision. You know, how their algorithm surfaces certain news posts versus other ones, that's an editorial decision. What we have let them get away with for far, far, far too long is that they hide behind the fact they're like, well, we don't have people doing it. We have our technology doing it.
We're a tech company.
What I say is, yeah, but what I say is it doesn't really make a difference. You know, be transparent about how your technology works and what it does and does not value. And also, that's kind of, you know, there was a person who created that technology, so there's obviously some human inputs that go into there. So, yeah, the idea that they're not media companies is a total farce.
So we can go on for hours about like just railing on them. What is the perfect outcome? Not, there is no perfect outcome, but what is the preferred outcome? And I'm not referring to how do they solve the problem. I'm referring to what should this experience be like at its, or at least what do you think would be a good experience for this?
Okay, so you and I, we're media producers, right? And when we create something, we receive credit for it or we receive criticism for it, but it's our names on it. I mean, there's somebody behind it. And if we mess up, we have to answer for it. But if we want to defend something, we can do something too. What Facebook and Twitter and on down the line need to do, and, you know, I'm biased as a journalist, hire a team of fact checkers, be transparent about the decisions they make and what they decide to censor or not censor, or what they decide to feature or not feature, and have somebody who's humanly accountable. It's not going to be perfect. It's going to be messy. It's going to be controversial all the time. But at least there's somebody there. There's a face that can defend it. I mean, no other media operation gets to hide behind, you know, the mask of technology. You know, everyone else has to answer for their work, and they should have to as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the here's the other challenge, and this is legit. I can understand their problem, and of course, you know, they can develop technology that does all this, but they can't develop technology that undoes it, which is a total BS story.
Exactly. Yeah.
And as a person who invests in tech and looks at tech all day, I can verify that this is true. If you can build it, you can break it down, and they're just saying that they can't. Mm-hmm. That's just an outright lie.
It gives them plausible deniability. Well, that's the only reason they refer to that. Yeah.
And that's also because we're addicted to their product and we don't want, like, whether it's conscious or subconscious, in some cases it's conscious and some cases subconscious, we don't want it to change. I mean, again, I'm trying to avoid the political piece of this because I just really am just done with politics. But when Donald Trump signed that order, he actually did a good thing in reality.
Yeah.
But what he did was he knew that there's no way in any world that Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey and anyone else for that matter is going to let that happen. Like that, we already know that that's not going to happen. And he knew that.
Well, when you say not going to happen, what do you mean specifically?
Well, I think he's basically calling them to come to the table and say, we're going to negotiate some sort of term that enable, because basically what he signed would eliminate a Donald Trump himself. Like it would eliminate his ability to use the Twitter pulpit, and he doesn't want that. So what he did is he said basically, fine, I will take away what makes you guys make so much money, and you will have to be accountable.
Right.
And you know that they're not going to want to do that, so they'll have to come to the table, they'll lobby, a ton of money will go down the drain, and eventually there will be a split in the middle where sort of weak legislation meets weak, you know, I hate using the word censorship, but like weak editorial. It'll just be average, run-of-the-mill, punt, make money, and keep tweeting. And all of this is to say, the reason I care about this is that there is one, there is the fact that we need more truth in our lives. We need more factual information. But we also need to be able to like cite and defend where we're coming up with stuff, because, and this isn't political, and people listening right now, you're probably thinking like this is a soapbox.
Totally.
It's not.
But it should appeal to everyone across the political spectrum. Everybody, conservative, liberal, and anywhere in between, should be concerned with the role that Facebook and Twitter play in shaping our public discourse. These are the largest media companies in the history of the world.
Yeah.
Their influence is utterly unprecedented, and yet we let them operate with close to zero transparency. It's insane.
Yes, and like kind of the point that I was getting with this is like it literally does not matter to me what side of the aisle you fall on. What I know is the pace of information is traveling at epic speed. It's literally the fast, and it's only getting faster, and that means that not everyone, in fact, most people can't keep up. They can't do their own fact checking. They can't even tell the difference between a real post and a fake post. And so at a certain point, we have to have pieces in place that basically say like, hey, you know, you shared this. This is apolitical. I'm telling you that the story that you're posting is coming from a source that is known to do this kind of stuff. It's not, I'm not saying it's not real, but it's probably not real. And just tagging it and like letting you become aware. That's one part of this. The other part of this is like, whose posts matter? Everyone's? Just famous people? Just influential people? Political people? Is it stock market news that's no good? Is it just stuff that can incite violence that's no good? Is it, if I lie about sports, is that also, you know, a lie? Like, where's the line? And that's my only concern that we need to really be careful about, is like letting it start with like, you know, maybe it's just verified accounts. To start with, like verified accounts have the most followers. They are viewed as more influential and therefore should be held to a higher standard.
Sure, but then inevitably you enter a conversation about who gets verified and who doesn't. You know, Twitter has not been transparent about that process, about what it factors into that decision making.
How did I get verified?
And I'm not verified.
You're more legit than me.
I don't know about that, but thank you. But I mean, I for a while resisted requesting verification because it seemed kind of like a try hard move, a little shameless. But then after a while, I was like, the week I decided to request for verification, a bunch of alt-right figures had their verification revoked, and it kicked off an entire controversy about who gets verified and who doesn't.
Yeah.
And then Twitter discontinued their Twitter, their verification request program. And it's been a total black box ever since then. No one knows how it works. No one knows what goes into the decision making. So once again, they're already making editorial decisions and they should be treated accordingly.
Well, as one of the chosen ones, I was told, because they send you a gift bag. And when you get it, you open it up, it's got the blue check mark and it just says you're one of the cool ones. And I was like, what? Me? What?
Damn. What's in the gift bag?
Oh, dude, I can't tell you. I can't. That's
totally like a live bird kind of flies out.
A couple butterflies, a few butterflies. And then honestly, it's all of you get a list of all of the posts that have been taken down because they weren't factual. So I know.
Yeah.
I know the truth about everybody.
Wait,
that's what we got.
Yeah. I mean, just to kind of drive this home, with everything that is going on currently in this country, with all the protests, all of that activity taking place on Twitter. And I think people deserve to know why certain posts are being elevated above others and how that is shaping the public discourse. Like all of the Black Lives Matter protests have surfaced through Twitter, which is great. I mean, it's a great organizing tool in that respect.
Yeah.
But if they were to make an editorial decision to suppress posts like that, right now, we would have no way of knowing, and I find that bothersome.
And that is the billion-plus-dollar question. And I think that as users, you know, I guess, and listen, I'm going to say this as a person who's both done and doing media and tech. We really have to stop looking at tech and other things like that as magic. I feel like a lot of people look at social media and tech as it's magic. and they don't want to challenge their brain to figure out how might you profit from this magic? What? How does it work? We got to start answering these questions because this is like kind of how we get by now. Like I definitely use Twitter to surface topics that I'm interested in. And I go back and read stuff in different places later. But like generally speaking, if you ask me midday, like what I know, it came from Twitter, probably.
Yeah.
Which means it could be wrong.
But I also think, you know, to your point, like when I first got on Twitter, it was just to make lame jokes and kind of keep up on sports news. Not nearly as important as Black Lives Matter protesting. So it's taken on this new life. Maybe Twitter never intended to, you know, the original intent was not to be a news network. But that's where it is now. You got to grapple with the reality. So totally, if you're going to make fact-checking decisions, fine. Just be held accountable. It's wild to me that it seems like such a large ask that we hold these companies accountable.
I agree with you, obviously. And ending on this, you know, I think the part that is just not – this is the part that we can't really get past. And I don't know how to get past it, and I don't know how they get past it without, like, the law stepping in somewhere. The reality is, it is just like iPhones. The sticky factor is what keeps you in, and the longer you're in, the more money they make. iPhones give you all these funny apps, these fun things to play on, excuse me, and it keeps you in the phone. You want to buy another phone, you want to upgrade to get more of the fun little apps. And on Facebook and on Twitter, it's about keeping your eyes glued to the page. And at the end of the day, you know, I read a lot of things that I'm sure are true, and I read a lot of things that I think are absolutely asinine, and I spend way more time on the asinine ones than the true ones. And that's just the way it is. And I'm an, you know, educated person, but it's entertaining. I think my friends that post conspiracy garbage are hilarious. I think they're sad, but they're hilarious.
And guess what? Twitter and Facebook know that, and they don't want to relinquish that revenue.
Correct.
So, yeah.
And, you know, the capitalists can argue, and me would argue that they shouldn't have to, but they have to figure out a way to make it a safe place. There's a lot of industries out there, many of which get to run amok, but there's a lot of industries that make a lot of money and that are potentially dangerous. And, you know, it's not like tobacco, like even tobacco, like you ended up having to put you could get cancer on this thing on the front of the wrapper.
Yeah.
Like you should, then Facebook, when you sign in, where it used to say the mask, did you say Mark Zuckerberg and the rest? It should say like, hey, you can get brain, your brain can rot from playing on this.
Yeah. And I think all we're saying is they can't have it both ways.
They can't both
be making editorial decisions and then kind of abdicate the responsibility that comes along with that.
Totally agree. John, thank you for taking the time to come on. People can follow all of your fact check tweets at McDermott. I guess we will catch up with you probably next week, or I don't know. Let's keep the dialogue going because I think it's really interesting.
Oh, yeah. This isn't going away anytime soon.
All right, my friend. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, folks, we're going to take a commercial break. We're going to come back with Quantum RE and see. I told you this is going to be a good pitch, so get your phones ready. Dial it in. We'll be back. Dos cervezas, por favor. I will do that anytime. We are enjoying a beautiful summer day here. We got Matt Sullivan from Quantum RE. Matt, you there?
Yes, Scott. Good afternoon.
How are you doing?
Very well indeed. How are you?
Very good. That accent is fantastic, I have to tell you.
Well, actually, I was, you know, I downloaded Babbel and, you know, and instantly I'm now speaking with a British accent.
It's that's well played. We have a guy who works with us who's also, he's from London, and every time I get on the call with him, I told him I feel cleaner. Like, I feel like I just took a shower. Such a great accent. Okay. Hopefully it translates into people putting money into your company here. So I'm going to give you 1 minute to pitch exactly what Quantum RE is. And I'm going to say this one more time to everyone who's listening. You can go to republic.co/quantm-one and check this out. And then the number to call in after this pitch is 312-981-7200. I'm giving you all this up front because I think that all of you listening are going to find this to be particularly interesting for all of you in your lives right now. So fire away now, Matt. Give us the 1 minute pitch on Quantum RE.
Thank you. Well, we help homeowners pull cash from their home with no interest, no monthly payments, and no added debt. So what that means is, if you're a homeowner and you've built up equity, and you are either unwilling or unable to borrow money from a bank, we can help. And we do that with an instrument that enables you to get a cash lump sum, and there's no interest, there's no monthly payments, and there's no added debt. And you have up to 30 years to either sell your home or refinance the contract. The money that you get is tax deferred, and you can spend it on whatever you want.
Sounds simple enough, but there's always a hook, right? So what's the deal? How does it work?
It's the best way to describe what it does is to describe what it's not. So what it's not is a reverse mortgage. So what our company does is work with investors who are interested in taking part with you in the potential upside of your home. So in other words, our investors work with homeowners on a form of partnership so that if your house increases in value, they will share in some of that upside. But also, if it goes down in value, they also share in some of the potential loss as well. So it's a very different type of financial tool to a reverse mortgage or a loan or a home equity line of credit. The way that it works is that our investors buy into some of the current value of your home, and they agree with you to take a share of the property's increase in value. So if your house were to go up in value, when you sell it, they make their money by taking a share of the upside rather than charging you interest. And because of that, we can be much more flexible when it comes to looking at your debt-to-income ratio or your credit score or whether you are a W-2 employee, whether you have any income at all. And that means that for people that have been turned down by a bank or people that don't want to borrow money, we're a great solution, and we're able to provide much-needed cash to them that they can spend on whatever they want.
I think this idea is absolutely brilliant. Obviously, what I love about this is not only that you're doing this, but you're also equity crowdfunding, because in a way, this kind of reminds me of that. What I loved about equity crowdfunding when it first came online was kind of twofold, that not every person who is quote-unquote wealthy is rich enough to invest a ton of money, accredited-style investing. But they can afford to spend maybe $10,000 or $20,000 on something.
Yes.
And that to me is like, but they just never got the opportunity. So you have this tool that essentially facilitates that. But that's only one side of the coin. The founders who maybe are not plugged in to a community of rich investors, but do have a community of fans and a passionate people who support them, can essentially still get access to money for their business. What I love about this is that this literally, this is, to me at least, this is literally the exact same thing. Not the crowdfunding component of it, but the ability for me as a homeowner to basically sell equity in my home to an investor.
Yes.
Go ahead.
But that's exactly right. So what you're doing is you're saying you're selling something that you own. And that's been the real problem up until now, because the only way you can unlock your equity is by borrowing money. So the only solution right now is to go deeper into debt. And you say, well, hang on, I own this equity. I've spent 15 or 20 years paying it down. I've done what everyone said I would do. I've paid my mortgage every month. But now I want to get hold of that equity. I've got to go back to the bank, but I don't want to do that. Or maybe my circumstances have changed and I don't have that income anymore. So even though I've built up this wealth, it's sitting in this single concentrated illiquid asset that I can't get my hands on. So the investors that we work with understand that there is real value in someone's home. There's real potential, especially if those houses go up in value over a period of time. So it's a very different instrument. And from the crowdfunding perspective, we want people to invest in us. We believe that what we're doing is really going to help people. But also, if we can build an army of evangelists, as it were, who understand the value of this and may even want to use it for themselves. For us as a company, we have this army of people out there who are all talking about our product to their friends and their family. So that's really going to help us get even more traction.
So, you know, here's the thing for those who are listening to this and are curious maybe as to why or how this works. The market right now, and if you're familiar with the term iBuyer, the market for people who are investing in buying homes, particularly single family rentals, is through the roof. There are people at gigantic, some of the largest PE firms in the entire world and hedge funds in the world, BlackRock, Blackstone. If you talk to them, they believe that we're not that far off from a world where a large number, when I say large number, I mean potentially even the majority of single family homes are actually not owned by the people who live in them and that they rent, and that it is actually more economical for the right type of person to rent a home rather than to own a home, which is something that is said by a rich person who's going to try to own your home. And when I look at this and I look at the way that investing is shifted in the markets, I look at Robinhood and M1 Finance and TD Ameritrade and others that now offer fractional investing for those that maybe couldn't afford to buy one full share of Amazon, but could buy a fractional share of it. This is a, in my mind, a no-brainer evolution of housing. Like, there are going to be fractional ownerships all over the place.
And I absolutely agree with you. And I think there's a rationale for that. It's not something that's been forced. It is an evolution. And it does help because if money is tied up and there are willing buyers and willing investors, that's where technology comes along. And that's where developments such as crowdfunding enable those types of investments to be made. But also, there are people that are forced into renting because they cannot get onto the property ladder. Now, if you can imagine parents who have equity locked up in their home, who are now unable to unlock that without borrowing money, that can be used as a deposit or a down payment, rather. So what we're doing is helping people possibly get onto the property ladder. So, you know, even though many people are forced to rent, if you can create cash from home equity, it solves all sorts of problems, not just solving short-term cash requirements, but, you know, it helps stimulate, the economy in lots of other areas.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. So we're going to take a quick break, commercial break, and then if you don't mind, can you hang on the line? And then I want to have you come back and talk about the actual investment and kind of what you need to use it for and sort of sell us on the pitch. Does that sound good?
I'd be delighted.
All right, we'll have you hang on, and then all of you listening right now, feel free to call in and tweet at Katoon. I'll answer as many questions. If you want to call in and ask Matthew questions, feel free. The number is 312-981-7200. We'll be back right after this. Matthew, you still with us?
I'm still with you. Absolutely.
Awesome. All righty, folks. We are talking to the founder of Quantum RE. Matthew, if you can give us a little bit of info on the actual raise. Everyone knows how if people have questions, you can just tweet at us at Katoon or at Technori. But I think everyone, for the most part, understands the concept of the CrowdSafe. Can you talk to us a little bit more about what the actual terms are, what you're offering, and what you're trying to raise the money for?
Thank you. Well, the company itself is up and running. We're generating revenues. And so if I can answer your questions in reverse order, we're raising capital to grow the business. And most of the money that we raise, we will allocate to marketing. Now, the job of our marketing team is to spread the word of our product, which is the ability to unlock equity without taking on debt. So it's a very powerful product. And what we want to be able to do is increase primarily our digital marketing spend. So that means we want to increase our Facebook and online advertising activity to drive more people to us so that we can convert them and provide them with home equity agreements. And what that does is that generates immediate revenues for us because we make money because we charge the homeowners an origination fee. So once the contract is completed and the homeowner has received their lump sum, we take a small percentage of that as the origination fee. And that's all agreed with the homeowners up front. So what that means is that any money that we spend on marketing has an immediate cash flow benefit once it converts. Now, the second part of our business is to make investing in home equity agreements available to everyone. And that's our second most important objective. First of all, we want to make homeowners, give them the ability to unlock equity without borrowing money. The second thing is we want to give them the opportunity of investing in real estate without the headache of being a landlord. So the other part of the capital is to finalize and complete the work that we've already started on our exchange and to enable people to be able to buy into these home equity agreements through our platform. And the way that we're raising money is through the Republic crowdfunding platform using an agreement called a SAFE, which stands for a simple agreement for future equity. And the critical word there is future equity. So what it means is that you don't get your equity today. What happens is you wait as a holder of a simple agreement for future equity. You wait and see what happens in terms of our next fundraising. So if we raise a large amount of capital in our next round at a very high valuation, you're able to get your equity at a significant discount to that. And what it also does is it protects you as a potential shareholder. And let's say that we raise money, but it's at a lower valuation, you get to buy in at the lower valuation as well. So it's a great instrument for crowdfunding and other investors because it protects you for potential down rounds, and it also allows you to get a very good discount if we raise money, which I'm sure we will be able to do at a much higher valuation a bit further along.
Very cool. I guess my kind of final question I've got for you in this whole thing is ultimately how much, you know, how many investors do you, I don't mean for the campaign, I mean just in general in your business, how many investors, how much money do you need to have behind you to be able to actually offer, you know, and do you offer this to every home? Like, does every homeowner qualify? Are there certain homes that you guys don't want to invest in? You know, what is the challenge? What does that look like? That's the only thing, because I'm reading through the term sheet as you're going through this, and I'm looking at all of the, you know, sort of the storylines that I've seen on this company, and I see nothing but success. The only question I kind of have is how, what is this, the economy of scale have to look like?
Well, I think, and it's, you're absolutely right to ask that, but the most important thing is that this company is over 2 years old, and there's about almost $2 million has gone into the company so far. So we are relatively evolved. Most of the hard work in actually getting us to this point has already been done. So, you know, if you look at this sort of J-curve concept, we really hope that we really expect to be on the upside now. We're a cash flowing company. So as money is deployed into marketing, when we complete a home equity agreement with a homeowner, we get paid cash. So we are immediately cash flowing, and that really helps grow the business, because as more and more deals are done and as we become more successful each month, we earn more money. So we're not one of those companies where you can't predict where the money is actually going to come from. So to be able to scale our business, we need that lump of cash to light a fire under our online marketing strategy. That's going to have an immediate positive cash flow effect for us. And in the larger scale, we will be in a position then where we're much more valuable because we have much more in terms of revenues and customer base. And that's going to enable us to earn or to raise money at a much higher valuation, which will be to the benefit of the shareholders in the current round.
Very cool. Well said. Where do people go to invest? Where do people go to learn more about your company?
If you go to republic.co, and if you search for QuantumRE, that's QUANTMRE, all of the information about the raise is there. There's the story about the company. There's all of the information that I talked about. Republic do a fantastic job, and it's been marvelous working with them so far. We have nothing but wonderful things to say about them. So everything you need to know should be there. If you have any questions, there's an FAQ section where you can put your question in, and we'll get back to you, you know, as soon as possible to answer that question.
Awesome. Thank you, Matthew, very much. Appreciate you taking the time.
Scott, thank you.
Yep. All right, folks, we're down to the final countdown of a minute. If you are not already subscribing to the TechNerd newsletter, you should check that out. We're writing blog pieces. I write a blog piece every single week. It goes out on Tuesdays. Go to TechNerd.com, and you should be able to subscribe right there. The blog piece I'm working on right now, obviously you heard about when I talked to John McDermott this in the early part of the show, is about this sort of fact-checking completely agree with many of the people who've called in, and people have already tweeted at us and tweeted at me saying you got to pick one. You can't you can't check everything and you can't check nothing. So I think totally agree with that. I think I'm going to expound more on this topic in my blog. And if you're not listening to Technory Podcast, you're truly missing out. Technory Podcast is like this show with tech founders that are a little bit more successful in the sense that they've had exits or whatever. And I can say naughty words and I can go on for hour or minute. And I really don't even know. I hit play and then I just go until I don't go anymore. So for that, you go to Spotify, follow Technory. And my last thing, it's probably not for you guys, but Technory playlist. We've got some awesome music on Spotify. So that's it. Boom. That's a wrap.
Bogus claims are slowing unemployment payments. One of the scams the president of the Better Business Bureau tells us about at 7:18. We are open for business early.
Bob Surratt, Radio Chicago, WGN.